There is a new book out that I just couldn't put down. I just love these books. RFK, his words for our times. June 6 marks 50 years since Robert F. Kennedy was assassinated. And the book, we're going to talk about it with the author Richard Allen right after this. Don't go anywhere.
Flying a mile high, it's Joe Madison, the Black Eagle.
On this date, June 4th, 1922, Samuel Lee Gravely, Jr. He was the first African-American to be commissioned as an officer in the United States Navy, was born in Richmond, Virginia. But on this date, this is kind of confusing here. On this date in 1922, he was born. Okay, I got you, because I was about ready to say, I know the dates of the Golden 13th, but you know, he was born on this date, Richard Lee Gravely, Jr., Samuel Lee Gravely, Jr., born on this date in Richmond, Virginia. There's a great book out called The Golden 13th. These are the 13. I think these are men, Robert Small, naval base up in Illinois, cold up there, man. I spoke up there one time, and it is cold up there in the wintertime. But these men were selected, and they had to train by themselves. They had to eat by themselves. They had to live alone. It was interesting, but they all ended up being commissioned. Let me welcome Rick Allen, and thank you so much for taking the time. Robert F. Kennedy, his own words for our times. So this is an interesting title.
Thank you.
Does it suggest that Robert Kennedy was ahead of his time?
Well, he's certainly relevant to our times, and in many ways he was both ahead of his time and representative of the ongoing struggles and challenges the country has had. And the thesis of our book, as you know, Joe, is that his words are relevant not only for their eloquence, but also for the vision of the country that he sketched, the policies he worked towards, the reconciliation of people, and the true equality of opportunity that he fought so hard for.
And Rick Allen, we also have to admit, don't we, that he had to sort of reconcile some of the problems and differences he had with his own upbringing, his own politics, didn't he?
Yes, in many ways, and probably most so during the 1968 presidential campaign and the years leading up to it, as he grew to become more passionate about ending America's involvement in the Vietnam War. And he consistently took responsibility for being part of the administration that had made some of the first steps into Vietnam. So Robert Kennedy felt very comfortable about saying, actions that I participated in, actions that I took, were wrong. He said that tragedy is a tool for the living. It's not a guide for how to live.
Yeah, right. And when it came to the civil rights movement, similar situation. There was constant conflict with him and civil rights activists.
That was more, I think, a question of tactics than ultimate strategy. Robert Kennedy believed in the cause of civil rights. He didn't necessarily believe in the politics of civil rights, particularly associated with the presidential campaign in 1960.
What's the difference?
He wasn't personally invested as much.
Oh, yes, that's what I was referring to.
Yep.
Because the politics of civil rights, he believed in the cause, but not the politics. Explain that to people and how it shows up in the book.
Well, as Dr. King spoke so often, there has always been a period, I think, in the United States where voices have said, slow down, we'll get to your objective, whatever the marginalized community may be at the time, but we just can't do it now, or we just can't do it that fast, or we just can't do it that way. That's a very different thing than saying, I don't think you should reach that objective. But for the people impacted, it has much of the same impact, right? Because you're not moving forward.
Right.
And I think what Robert Kennedy came to believe is that is the fierce urgency of now, right? And that was what he increasingly began to speak towards, preach towards, and work efficiently himself. Joe, you're so familiar and so tied to the life of Washington, D.C., among all the other cities that you've worked in and helped to lead around the country. Here in Washington, D.C., Robert Kennedy knew that in the early 1960s, there was no integrated public pool in the city.
Right, right.
Now, at various times, particularly as a member of the government, as the Attorney General, he could do things with the full weight and power of the federal government. What he did on this issue was say, it's going to take too long. We're going to go raise the money, work with the city, and get the pool built. And he did that really as a private citizen with access to a lot of power and money, but just deciding it had to get done right away and it had to be ready for that summer, and it was.
Yeah. Let me ask the question and that comes out in the book, or at least if not, and that is, and there's probably more than just one person, but who most influenced him in his life?
Wow, that is a question that's got a lot of answers. Obviously, his relationship with his brother, President John Kennedy, was exceptionally close, particularly for the last 10 years or so of President Kennedy's life. And I think that relationship was unique in American politics. It was unique to have two brothers, not as co-equals, but nearly so, in power, one a president, one an attorney general, and have them so perfectly complement one another. I think that had a huge influence on Robert Kennedy. It explained the depth of his grief on his brother's death and really the continued evolution of his personality and his politics thereafter. But he was also deeply influenced by his faith, by his father, who was a very tough and driven man. And I think what made Robert Kennedy particularly remarkable is that he was deeply influenced by all the people that he sought out and met with, those who had no other access to anyone of power. He went to places that others didn't, to the Delta in Mississippi, to the reservations in the Plains states, to the inner cities around the country, to the agricultural fields of California, to be among the migrant farm workers.
Now,
those were not places others were going, as you know well.
Well, not only, they wouldn't go. And here is a guy growing up in wealth in Boston, I mean in Massachusetts, and he didn't, well, and I always go back to the Delta and the Mississippi. He went to learn.
Yes.
I mean, that's what the sense I always got. He didn't go for for a show. He didn't go for a camera op, a photo op. There's
that's
the word
right.
I'm looking for. It was not a photo op with him. I think people need, unlike today, you know, it's a photo op for most of these folks. He actually went to learn, didn't he?
He did indeed, and he learned a very great deal by being on the site, by talking to real people, finding out what the challenges were that were the impediments in their lives, and being able to track a common set of aspirations that people had around the country. But the photo op was an important part of it in this sense. Part of the difficulty that Kennedy saw in the America of his time, and that we have in the America of our times, is that the media is not going to cover these communities. And so many Americans can kind of cocoon themselves in not really understanding what life is like. So for Kennedy, the ability to use his force of celebrity to inspire and shame the media into accompanying him
right.
gave him the ability to put the spotlight on. And so, as has been the case and many times during the civil rights movement, when people can see the conditions of their
right.
fellow Americans' lives, it becomes much harder to ignore.
Now, there are, and help me understand, your book is an update from original work you did 25 years ago.
Yes,
so
that's
correct.
Is,
so here's the question. Why the two versions? Why the update?
Well, because this is another opportunity to reflect on what Kennedy's life and words have to say to us, I also wanted to not only take advantage of the 50th anniversary, but
yeah.
we're 25 further years on, and I think you have to pose the question, is he still relevant?
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
and then beyond that, we had new material. And so
okay. All right. So
there's
all three,
also
all three.
That's
yeah.
right.
All,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense. I mean, you didn't have 25 years ago Barack Obama.
That's right.
And so here and then, but yet you've got Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, giving a speech, letting folk know, oh, within 40 years, I think was whatever the time, we will have a black, we could have a black president. So you couldn't have done that 25 years ago and
yep.
let it come true.
That's right.
Wow. Wow. It you know, I love these books. I really do. And I love them for the reasons that you pointed out. It gives us a time to reflect on how relevant, you know, well, it also lets us know not only how relevant they were then, but also how not a whole lot has changed. I mean, we're still dealing with some of the same issues that folks dealt with 50 years ago, aren't we?
In many cases, that's absolutely correct. And I think the point of the book from our perspective wasn't to have an exercise in nostalgia. It wasn't just to say this is an important historical figure that you should know about. It was recognizing that more than half of Americans living today were born after Robert Kennedy died.
No.
They have
That's right.
no direct experience with him. This is the only place where you can see the body of the man's work, his public remarks throughout the course of his career, and we want people to do that, to recognize that we've been working on these issues for a long time, but also to be a spark, a catalyst for action. This is not a passive book to read. This is an active book to get engaged
yep.
in the life of your community.
That's why I love it. It is about, and that's what he was about and what he initiated, civic engagement. That
yes,
was
sir.
That was the key phrase, civic engagement. And Lord knows that's what we need now. Rick Allen, I carry the book around with me.
Joe, that's wonderful.
No, I really do, because every now and then I get a page and I go, oh, I've got to include it in my speech. I've got to get, because, you know, I keep forgetting what you just said. Half the folks weren't even born.
Right.
And so to them, it's like all this is new. It's
yep.
not new.
That's very true, and I really believe that this is a very helpful framework for us to think about how we get closer to what the ideals were and are of America, which most of us hold in common, and to think about America as an exceptional nation, not because we've reached perfection, because we sure as heck haven't, but because we keep striving to reach perfection, and we have a piece to play in it.
Yeah, Cliff from Connecticut, you have a question.
Thanks, Joe.
Yes.
I'd like to point to your guest. Both Kennedys were elected through the vote process. Am I not mistaken? The Electoral College, but they were in sync. So my question to you is, what are your thoughts about the system changing to the popular vote opposed to the Electoral College?
Well, Robert Kennedy was not elected president.
Okay, well, you're right. Yeah, he got assassinated, correct?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, just the concept of the popular vote versus the electoral vote, because my ending point is that if we don't have this process, that Trump can be reelected again through the Electoral College. Am I correct?
Well, yes. I don't know if it's a question as it relates to this book, but I'll let Rick Allen respond.
Just a thought on
that
process.
Okay. All right. Rick?
Well, I spent a lot of my life in presidential politics, predominantly in California, but elsewhere as well. There has been a significant debate about the value of the Electoral College in a modern society, and I think it is getting more and more seriously called into question. To change that system is a pretty difficult process, and all we needed to have won in 2016 was 70,000 votes across 3 or 4 states. And the easier thing to do is beat them at the game as it's currently defined.
Yeah.
And I think I would urge everybody to focus first on that. If you want to participate in a long-term effort to change the nature of the electoral process, I'm all for that, because the notion that the will of the American people writ large, which is a popular vote concept, is denied in repeated elections, that's a disturbing and troubling one. It's a low-hanging fruit issue, right? So much easier. Turn out the vote. Make sure everyone comes out and expresses their will in every election. If we do that, we'll win no matter what the heck the rules are.
Yeah, it's a modern time, the Electoral College. Back in the day, you know, you could campaign New York, you can campaign in on East Coast, the most populated states, and ignore all the smaller states, and they wouldn't be in play. But I think what he just said, though, the caller hung up. Your point is well made. In just a few of these so-called districts, all it would take was 70,000 votes, and it would have been different. And Lord knows more folks stayed home than that.
It turned out to be about one vote per precinct.
Wow. Right?
So if you boil it down to what can I do as a single individual? That's a start. Can't you get one more person to turn out to vote?
Yeah. Hey, look, again, as I said, I keep the book with me. I thoroughly enjoy these books, because it does allow us to reflect, and also it allows us to recognize that there's nothing new, and it gives us a blueprint on civic engagement and what people did. So, Rick Allen, thank you for taking the time. Let me encourage everybody, please, you can go online and order the book. It's titled RFK, His Words for Our Times. Thank you, Rick Allen, for
thank
being
you,
on the
Joe.
Patterson Show. And we'll talk again. Thanks a lot.
Terrific. I appreciate it.